Call your attention to the book of Philippians this morning. The book of Philippians. I was thinking about this subject for the last couple of weeks, and I may tell a story in once I get into the message a little bit about contentment that happened a couple of years ago. But you know, we can get anxious about a lot of things. I know when I read through the book of Philippians, I enjoy it for many reasons, but one of the things that I enjoy about the book of Philippians is that it's really a thank you note. It's the Apostle Paul thanking a church in a place called Philippi, for them basically remembering him. And when you think about the apostle and the little four-chapter book that we have, he thanks them for many things, but he says, in this difficult situation that I'm in, thank you for remembering me. And all of us go through difficult times. Very few of us have had to endure what the Apostle Paul had to endure. At the writing of this book, he is sitting in a Roman prison. He has been there not because he's done anything wrong as far as being a criminal, but basically he was arrested because he preached the gospel. But you got to remember that in those times, and even in our times in certain countries, you can get arrested for being a Christian that tries to share the gospel of Jesus Christ. It's only been a few days ago when there was a pastor that has been in jail in the country of Turkey. And he had been basically over there and he had tried to preach, and so they arrested him as being a secret agent for the CIA. And so finally he has been released, but the Apostle Paul had to suffer greatly. And in this little thank you note that he gives, he is thanking them for the offering that they sent to him. He sends this note back by a man named Epaphroditus. And this man takes it back to the church, and they get to read this little letter of thanks from the Apostle Paul. There's people that say that there's not really a lot of doctrine in this book. I don't really believe that. There's a lot of good doctrine that is taught in this book. And the thing that I'm going to talk about today is something that you ought to understand about your Christian life. The title of the message today is contentment. And sometimes we have a hard time with that. Let's look at our verses. Let's look at verse 11 and 12. Not that I speak in respect of want. In other words, I'm not writing this because of something that I want you to do for me, all right? He says, for what I have learned in whatsoever state I'm in, therewith to be content. I know both how to be abased, in other words, I know how to be made low, and I know how to abound, in other words, I know how to be prosperous. To everywhere and in all things, I'm instructed both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. How many of us truly know how to be contented? I don't want you to answer verbally. I just want you to answer in your own mind. This past Tuesday was the funeral for one of the finest ladies that this church has ever had as a member. Her name was Annette Hicks, and I had a little part in it. Brother Don had a little part in it. Brother Darrell had a little part in it. And when we went to the graveside over at Melwood Cemetery, her grandson had a few words to say at the graveside. And I was just standing there on the outside of the little tent, just listening. And Marty said this, her grandson. He said, "Myrna was a professional worrier." In other words, she worried about everything. Brother Don related in the funeral that she was so meticulous at her job as being a secretary that one day she spent literally 3 or 4 hours trying to find 25 cents on a report to make sure that it reconciled. He humorously said, I told her, "Miss Hicks, let me just give you a quarter and be done with it." But she worried about things. And you know, we've got probably some professional worriers here today. I mean, you worry about Social Security being in the bank account first of the month. You worry about maybe your retirement from your company being in the checking account the way it's supposed to be direct deposited. And if it misses it by a day, you start getting anxious. Sometimes we worry about what I think's crazy stuff. My wife starts getting all jittery when her car gets down to a quarter of a tank. I don't want to run out. It'll get down to a quarter of a tank and she'll say, "I think you need to put some gas in my car." I did that. I got in it the other day and she told me, said, "I need you to fill it up." And it was at almost a half. She doesn't want to run out of gas. And so we have folks that worry about all kinds of things. Well, I want to talk to us a little bit today about being contented. And may I say, first of all, that contentment is learned. You don't just start out life with it. If you doubt that, even the Apostle Paul, as wise as he was, as much knowledge as he had. And let's face it, the Apostle Paul was a very learned man. I mean, he was trained at the feet of Gamaliel. He was a Pharisee of the Pharisees, which meant that he had gone to the best rabbinical schools. The man could speak multiple languages. He could debate with the best of them. He could speak to those philosophers in Athens, and he could debate with the Pharisees in a synagogue. It did not matter who the audience was. The Apostle Paul was one of the smartest guys in the room. And so you've got this man, but yet in verse number 11, he tells us this. He said, "For I have learned." When he met Christ on the Damascus Road in Acts chapter 9, it wasn't something that was placed into him like the gifts that God gives to his Christians, his children. The Apostle Paul said, "For I have learned." Not only that, but if you look at verse number 12, he says, "In all things I am instructed." In other words, there's a process. There's an education that must take place for you to be able to get to this particular spot in your Christian life. And sometimes it's difficult when we're trying to get to that place of contentment. We have things that we have just in our minds because we are born with it. We're born with things like covetousness. We're born with the nature of selfishness. And so when we see somebody that has something, we think, "Man, I'd like to have that too." And it's awful difficult to see maybe brothers and sisters in Christ and they have things and we would like to have those things, but yet we don't. Well, if we get to the point of maturity and we get through God's school, we can come to a place where that we can say with the Apostle Paul, "These things I have learned." Many years ago, my first year of college, I was attending Bob Jones University in Greenville, South Carolina. I attended there 1 year. And as I was looking through the Christian bookstore there at the university, I came across the book by Dr. Bob Jones Sr., and the title of the book was Things I've Learned. And basically, it was just a little small book that probably was not 100 pages, but he would have little sayings that would be the chapter titles of each one of the chapters. And it would say things like this at the beginning of the chapter: do right till the stars fall. And if the stars fall, do right. It would say things like this: when gratitude dies on the altar of a man's heart, that man is well nigh hopeless. And I would read that book over and over and over again. Why? Because I wanted to glean something from someone that I considered to be a giant of in the faith, even though I never met him. Now, I had the privilege of being in the company of his son, Dr. Bob Jr. And I had the privilege of being in the company of his grandson, Dr. Bob III. But I never met Dr. Bob Sr., even though that little book blessed my heart so very, very much. And I probably still have that in my office at my house, in my library. I have some books here in this library, but I probably have just as many at home in the library that I have it at the house. And I just loved the fact that I could learn from this great, great man of God. And so the Apostle Paul said, I've learned this. And you and I need to realize that once we become a Christian, we don't just get it instantaneously. Sometimes that maturity takes time. Is that not why Paul told young Timothy about putting men into the ministry? He said, not a novice, not somebody that's just new to the scene. Why? Because being lifted up with pride, he will fall into the condemnation of the devil. And so he said, these things I've learned. I've been instructed. And you and I need to realize that when we're not content, just happy with what God is doing in our lives, then that means that we've still got a ways to go. And may I say that even those of us that maybe are a little older in the Lord, and every once in a while we maybe have got to the place where the Apostle Paul has gotten where he says that I'm content, can I tell you that sometimes we fall back? Sometimes we're riding around in a 2012 truck. And then all of a sudden we go by a car lot and we see a new, shinier version of what we're driving. And we think, man, I'd like to have that. Well, how am I going to get that? Well, let's finance it for 8 years. And the next thing you know, not only have you paid for the truck, have you paid for it twice because of the financing on it. And so, what do? We ought to say, I'll be content until I can pay for it and not have to pay for it twice. But yet, those desires. Boy, we get to looking at those shiny tires. We get to looking at that two-tone paint job. We get to looking at the audio system in it, and it's like, I got to have that. Paul said, be content. And he said, you've got to learn it. Now, let me ask you a question. When you were young, did you go through a learning curve in your marriage? Sure. You probably did. You had to learn some things. And sometimes, as Mays Jackson would say, you have to learn the hard way. I remember I had the bright idea one time that I was going to buy and sell a truck. And it all started because I had bought and sold a truck before. Now, years ago, I used to have to handle the athletic departments. That's Brother Chad's department now. But I didn't have a pickup truck. I had a Gremlin. Have you ever tried to put 1,000 pounds of charcoal in the back of a gremlin? Because see, we used to cook the chicken with charcoal. We didn't have the big smoker like we've got now to cook it in. No, we had men that would, there'd be some of them clipping chickens and some of them would be putting charcoal out and lighting the charcoal and trying to get it all balanced out. And sometimes the chicken, when it would come off, some of it would be charcoal and some of it wouldn't be completely cooked. And so I'm trying to get all of this stuff together. Well, finally one year, I was able to buy an old truck. It didn't have a third gear. I had to go from second to fourth. Well, afterward, I put an old transmission that I found in a junkyard. I put that in it. Well, I sold it and I made like $800 on it. Well, $800 was like $10,000 back to me now, all right? And I got the idea, I need to do that again. Well, we spent the $800 on something. Well, I went to the bank, Gwinnett County Bank, right up the road at Mountain Park from the church. And I said, I need to borrow. And I told them what I wanted to borrow. I said, now, don't send this paperwork to my house. I'm going to come by and pick it up. About 2 days later, that phone rings at the church, and it's Deb. What is this loan we got from Gwinnett County Bank? Well, I had to come clean. Well, let's just say that I've never done that since. You know, as the saying would go, we weren't singing What a Fellowship, What a Joy Divine at our house for a while, all right? We learned it the hard way. And can I tell you I've not done that since? Because that was a hard, hard lesson. But see, I wasn't contented with a gremlin. What I should have done is I should have been happy until the Lord gave me something else. But I was pushing the envelope. And so contentment is something that is learned. Let me give you a second thing. Commitment or contentment is not about circumstances and things. Look with me at verse 11. He said, in whatsoever state I am in. Now the word state there does not mean Georgia. It does not mean Florida. It does not mean California. It's whatsoever condition or circumstance that I find myself in. He said, I am therewith to be content. Look with me at verse number 12. He gives six things that are parallel with each other. He gives three couplings. First of all, he says, I know how to be full and to be hungry. In other words, there are times when I have food to eat in this prison. And there's times when I don't have food to eat in this prison. There are times when I am fully satisfied, and there are times when I would like to have something to eat. Not only that, he said that he also knows how to be abounding, and he also knows how to suffer need. And so you've got abased, abounding, you've got hungry, you've got full, you've got abounding, you've got suffering. He knows every circumstance, every situation. He said, you be content. Now, there's very few of us that are sitting here today that really have had a lot of days in our life when we have gone hungry. There may be some. If we knew that there was a family in this church that did not have food, we would get them something today to make sure that they had something to eat. Now, just because you want a filet mignon doesn't mean that you're going to get it today. But you can have something to eat today. But Paul said, I know how to be hungry. I know how to be full. But whether I'm hungry or whether I'm full, I'm going to be content. May I say that it all starts with our attitude? Every time we're contented or discontented, it all starts with our attitude, what's between our ears. Now, I want you to hold your place in Philippians, and I want you to flip over to the book of 1 Timothy, and I want you to look with me at verse number 6, and we're going to read a few verses here. 1 Timothy chapter 6, beginning in verse 6. But godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. And having food and raiment, let us therewith be content. If you've got something to wear today, and you've got a little bit to eat today, you're supposed to be content. A few weeks ago, I was talking to Brother Ralph Sexton. I'll see Brother Ralph, I guess probably early Wednesday morning. We leave on Tuesday to go to Israel for a few days, and we'll be touring with Brother Ralph's group. And he and I were talking a few weeks back, and he told me, he said, I just got back from Korea. And he said it was a marvelous trip. And he told me the number of people that he had preached to. And he said it's the most amazing thing that I've seen. And he said, I had a translator that traveled with me every day. He drove me around, and he was able to translate. And he told me, he said, I want you to pray with me, Brother Sexton, that God will give me a better job. And Brother Sexton said, well, why do you want another job? And he said, well, because I want to be able to make more money. And Brother Sexton was kind of quiet for a moment, and he said, oh, no, don't misunderstand. He said, I don't want more money for me. He said, I'm good in the little room that I've got, sleeping on my mat with a bowl of rice. But he said, I want God to give me a bigger and a better job with more money so that I can give more to get the gospel to the whole world. And when he told me that, I thought, wow. And he said, Tommy, he said, I was under conviction hearing this Christian talk. And I just began to think about how good God has been to my family and how good God has been to this church. And how, if we're not careful, we'll just get to thinking that, hey, it's all because we're so bright. It's all because we're so smart. It's all because of us. When in reality, everything that this church has, everything that this church has been, everything that this church will ever be, everything that you have, everything that you have ever had or will have, it's because of God. He gives you the very breath that you have in your body at this moment. And He can take it at any moment. And you and I need to realize that contentment is not about circumstances. It's not about the things that we have in our life. Let me ask you a question. Have you ever praised God for a broken leg? Somebody goes, ooh, I don't know about that. Well, let me ask you this. Isn't that better than a broken neck? Have you ever praised God that you had a flat tire? Well, you know, you ought to, because if you hadn't had that flat tire, what about the guy that just went through that intersection and didn't stop for the light? He could have T-boned you. I think about those things more than I used to as a young Christian. I mean, there were times when I'd get all aggravated about somebody and they just didn't go when they were supposed to at a light. And I mean, now there's people and I'm sitting at a light and the light will turn, and the only thing faster than the speed of light is somebody honking the horn behind a light that turns green. But you know, you ought to stop and think, perhaps God is directing my circumstances here. Perhaps God is allowing the timing that I think is so crucial to keep me from something that would be a harm or a danger to me. And we need to think about those circumstances. Let me ask you a question. Suppose you just kind of, you had to have a place to stay one night, and the only place that you could find would be someplace down near the ocean. And when you walked in, there was a party going on, and you got a bunch of drunks in there and a bunch of sailors, and they're cursing right and left. And you're thinking, I'm so tired, I've got to have a place to rest tonight. Would you thank God for that? Most of us would say, I'm just not going to stay here. I will not. I'm not going to put up with this language. I'm not going to put up with this crowd. I'm just not going to do it. But suppose 2 hours before, you'd been on a boat. And you're out on that boat, and a storm comes up quickly. And that wind begins to blow, and that boat begins to get tossed to and fro. And the next thing you know, the waves begin to get not 3 or 4 feet, but maybe 10, 12 feet, and water begins to come in over the side. And you've got the wind blowing, and you've got the waves crashing in on you. And the next thing you know, you're about to sink, and so all you can do is grab a life preserver. And into the water you go, and you're holding on to this life preserver. And you're cold because the water's cold. And you're thinking, I don't know if I'm going to make it. And the thunder's clapping and the lightning's flashing. And you begin to feel yourself being moved. And it's like the tides are taking you. But the next thing you know, the tide is taking you in instead of out. And you're able to finally feel the bottom. And you're able to crawl out onto the beach. And the only thing that you see is a light. And you're finally able to get up there and you're like, maybe I can have a place to at least rest. And the only place is that place that you just went into. And you got the drunks that are screaming and fighting and drinking and all of that. But yet there's a little room. Wouldn't you thank God for that? Compared to what you've just gone through? Oh yeah. In whatever state you were in, be content. And so it's not all about circumstances. It's not all about things. Contentment is something that is learned. People ask, why do bad things happen to God's people? I can't tell you the number of times that question has been posed to me. Can I tell you the answer that the Apostle Paul gave? In this same little thank you note, I want you to turn to chapter 1, and I want you to look with me at verse 12. Philippians chapter 1, verse 12. But I would you should understand, brethren, that the things which happened unto me have fallen out, they have turned out, rather unto the furtherance of the gospel. He goes on to say that my bonds in Christ are manifest or made known in all the palace. Whose palace? Well, where is he writing from? He's writing from Rome. It's Caesar's palace. Not the one in Las Vegas, but the one in the Roman Empire. And he said, in all the palace, Caesar's palace, and in all other places. In other words, the reason that I have had to suffer things like shipwreck, things like stoning, things like being beat with a whip, having to be let down in a basket on a wall. Why did that happen? So that the gospel could be preached and go farther. Why do you have to go to a hospital sometime? So God can be glorified and so you can be a testimony. I can't tell you the number of times I've prayed this prayer to a hospital bed. Dear Lord, please help sister so-and-so to show these doctors and nurses how Christians handle sickness. Lord, help this brother to show these people how a Christian goes through adversity. And I pray that, and I want God to heal them and God to raise them up. But while they're there, it ought to be about glorifying God and the furtherance of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Because you see, trouble not only comes to the just, ultimately it comes to the unjust. And if the unjust see how the just handle it, and it's a good testimony, they'll say, I don't have what they've got, I need it. And we can share Christ with people. And so we see that it was for the furtherance of the gospel. So contentment is something that's learned. Contentment is something that's not about circumstances and things. But let me give you a third thing this morning. Contentment appreciates. It appreciates. Look with me at chapter 4. And I want you to look with me at verse 10 of our little book. But I rejoiced in the Lord greatly, and now at the last your care of me has flourished again. Wherein you were also careful, but you lacked opportunity. In other words, you have come through once again in my need, helping me in a time that I really needed it. You've done it over and over again. Now, there were times when you cared, but you didn't have the funds to do it. But when God blessed you and you were able to help me, you did it. And so he said, I rejoiced in the Lord. He was appreciative of this church. Now, this church began on a riverbank. When Paul and Silas, when they got to Philippi, they were on Gentile territory. They were in an area called Macedonia. And he found these people out on a riverbank, and they were trying to have some semblance of a prayer meeting. And so what does he do? He begins to talk to them, and they begin to have people converted. And the next thing you know, there's a church that's birthed there. And they never forgot old Paul. And when he was having trouble, they helped whenever they could. And he was appreciative of everything that they did for him. Now, what should we be appreciative of? Make a list. Are we not appreciative, or should we not be appreciative of God's good grace to us? I mean, when we think about the grace of God is what's given us salvation. How wonderful is that? I mean, when we breathe our last breath, we are absent from the body, present with the Lord. Why? Because we're good guys? We help old ladies across the street? No. We are saved because of the grace of God. In other words, Jesus paid it all when he shed his blood and died. And we have salvation because of his grace. For by grace are you saved through faith, and that not of yourselves. It is the gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast. Ephesians 2:8 and 9. We have the good grace of God in salvation. What about the good grace of God in our relationship with God? I mean, we're talking about the God that can will a miracle. We're talking about a God that can touch and a blinded eye can now see. We're talking about a God that can speak, and everything that you will ever see on this earth comes into existence. That awesome God wants to have personal fellowship with you and with me. I mean, when I get up in the morning, I can spend time with the Lord. When you get up in the morning, you can spend time with the Lord. And if we do it at the same time, he doesn't get confused. I mean, every one of his kids he can listen to and communicate with at the same time. Now, that's not true with me. I've got three grandkids, and if they're all talking at the same time, wait a minute, you guys got to hush. One at a time. Then it's me first, me first, me first. You know? But no, that God's not confused. And because of his grace, he gives us the opportunity to have wonderful fellowship on a daily basis with him. We can walk with him, and we can talk with him, and we can tell him all of our troubles. We can sing songs that do things in our heart, and all the while, what is our focus? Our focus is upon the Lord that is ministering to our souls. That's how big our God is. And it's all because of the grace of God. Should we not be appreciative of that? Oh, I think so. What about God's hand in our lives? I mean, all of us here, God has got a specific plan for you, and he's directing you. And again, he's not confused about it. He's got a plan for Brother Doug, you know? He's got a plan for me. He's got a plan for Charlene. He's got a plan for every one of us. And my plan may be different than your plan. But it's the hand of God that directs us. We used to have a lady in this church, and she used to sing a song, and I'm telling you, she could belt it out. Now, she was a mature lady. I mean, she was mature. That don't mean she was old. It just means she was mature, if you know what I mean. But she'd sing this song, "Hold to God's Unchanging Hand." And you could almost feel the walls just kind of moving. You know, when she would sing, she had such a powerful voice. That song has meant so much to my wife and I over the years, because we see the unseen hand of God, the unchanging hand of God, how that he has directed us and how he has protected us over the years. He's done the same thing for you. He has given you direction when you thought, I just don't understand what he is trying to do here. Think of God as a sculptor or as a potter. If you go over to the book of Jeremiah, we'll not turn there, but Jeremiah has got a fascinating picture of the nation of Israel. And he says that they are like the clay on the potter's wheel. And God is the divine potter, and he begins to fashion that vessel as he chooses. The vessel doesn't have anything to say about it. No, the vessel is made just as the potter wants it to be made. And he's making you the way he wants you to be made. You may not be what you would like to be until you get contented, because you got to realize that God is making you exactly like he wants. Now, I love to read fables. I really do. And I know that when it comes to fables, that it's just stories. But one of the things that I like about fables is that everything in there can talk. They can all talk. Animals talk. Trees talk. Stars talk. Everything talks. Well, you think about this. God's hand made you exactly like you are. The fable is this. There was one time a king, and the king was walking through his garden. And this king noticed that every tree or every shrub or every flower that he walked by just seemed to be sad. And he walked by a big oak tree and he said, "Oak, why are you sad today?" And the oak tree said, "Because I'm short and squatty." He said, "I'm not tall like the big pine." He said, "I'm just here, I'm just little short and really just kind of chunky." And that's why I'm sad. Well, he walked a little while longer and he came to the big tall pine tree. And the pine tree was sad. And he said, "Pine tree, why are you sad?" He said, "Because I'm not strong with deep roots like the oak. My roots are shallow. And every time a strong wind comes by, I don't know if I'm going to make it or not. I'm not strong like the oak." And every one of the trees and every one of the shrubs, they just were all sad. And then he walked a little farther and he came to a little daisy. And that daisy was just looking up into the sun with the biggest smile on his face. And he looked at the little daisy and said, "Daisy, why are you smiling? All the other things that I've talked to today, the oak tree and the pine tree, all of those are just sad. Why are you so happy today?" And he said, "Well, because I figured that when the king planted me, he wanted me to be a daisy. And I've determined that I'm going to be the happiest little daisy that I can possibly be because I'm doing what the king wanted me to do." That's us. Hey, we may not be the big Christians on the radio station. We may not be the personalities on the television. But he's planted you right here. Let's just be the best little daisies that we can be until he decides to make you into an oak or decides to make you into a pine tree. Let's just be the best little daisy that we can be, and let's be contented with what he's done for us. And so we have the grace of God. We have God's hand in our lives. And then we have the promises of God that are still true. The promises of God are a wonderful, wonderful thing for us to hold on to. We have the promise of salvation. He said if we would believe on Christ, that we can know that we're saved. We have the promises of God when it comes to fellowship. We have the promises of God when it comes to our eternity. We have the promises of God when it comes to protection. We have the promises of God when it comes to our purpose. We have the promises of God when it comes to our joy. Do you know that God wants you to be happy? He doesn't want you to be miserable. He wants you to be happy. And he's given us a little secret in our passage. We read verse 11 where he says, "In whatever state I'm in, to be content." He said, "I've learned that." He said, "Whether I'm full or whether I'm hungry, I'm content." But let me give you the little secret so that you can have success in your life. And we ought to be so contented because of this verse. Look with me at chapter 4 in verse 13. "I can do." Now, you know, when you're in elementary school, one of the things that they teach you is the difference between may and can. Because you see, a lot of times kids will use those two words interchangeably, and they're different. Can means that you've got the ability, there's the power behind you that you are able to do it. There's an enabling that goes on. May is asking for permission. But this says, "I can do all things." Now, if we were to stop right there, that would be a recipe for self-improvement. I can do all things. But that's not what the verse says. The verse says, "I can do all things through Christ, which strengtheneth me." In other words, it's all about the omnipotence of Jesus, and it's not about us. And so let's learn it today, church. Let's learn to be content. Let's not let our contentment be tied necessarily with our circumstances and with the things that we desire in our life. Now, let me say in closing, contentment is not a recipe for laziness. Some people say things like this, well, I'm just content to live just like I am. I think there's people that treat their properties like that. Some people, they cut their grass once every 6 months, whether it needs it or not. No. You know, there's hopefully no none in here, but there's some ladies and, you know, and they clean their house once every 6 months, whether it needs it or not. Can I tell you that there's a difference between dirt and dirty dirt? Dirt is whenever you've got a baby and that baby has drug something out in the last 2 or 3 hours. Dirty dirt's that same toy that's been laying out in the yard for 6 months and they got green stuff growing on it. Laziness is not a substitute for contentment. We ought to be workers. You doubt that? Go back one chapter to chapter 3. Look with me at the latter part of verse 13. Reaching forth. I'm not just going to sit here in this jail. No. I still got things I want to try to do. I may have to witness to these two guys that are on each side of me with these chains. Whenever I get to go and maybe have a meal, if they're serving that particular day with some of the other prisoners, then I can share Christ with them. But what am I doing? I'm reaching forth unto those things which are before me. In other words, I'm going to keep reaching and trying to serve Christ and spread that gospel as long as I've got something that's in front of me. I press toward the mark. In other words, there's a finish line out there and I'm going hard at it. I mean, I'm leaning forward. I'm like a racer. I'm trying to get to that finish line. And what is that mark? The prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. In other words, I'm not content to just sit around. I'm not content to just go, well, I used to do stuff. No, our contentment is that we're going to be joyous in our circumstances until God changes our circumstances. Because you see, you're just the clay on the wheel. And so contentment is learned. Contentment is not tied to our circumstances and our things. And when we have the commitment, it brings out an appreciation in our lives. Oh, may we be a contented people. And if we live contented lives, there's going to be a whole lot more peace and a whole lot more joy that's in your soul every day. You got to learn it, though. You got to learn it. You're not going to be born with it. If you get saved this morning, you're not going to have it overnight. It's going to take time for you to be contented. And may I say this? There are things that will come into your life and you're not going to be happy with. There's going to be times when you have circumstances that crop up in your life and you're going to be thinking, Lord, what are you doing to me? Lord, I mean, I'm on your wheel, but there are times when that potter's spinning that wheel and what's he doing? He's pulling the sticks out. He's taking those hard places and he's mashing those hard spots. And if it'll give, it can stay in the vase. But if it won't give, got to be thrown out. And sometimes that divine potter, he has to get the rough edges out. And he has to get the sticks and the stones out of our lives. And that's not always a pleasant thing. Oh, but listen, there's a contentment. But that contentment is something that it takes a time to get to it. There's a learning curve to it. And I hope that you're willing to hang in there with the Lord. Why? Because the joy is worth it. The song we sang just a little while ago, joy unspeakable and full of glory. Let's stand together. Thank you so much for being here today. As the musicians are coming.